Welcome back. Welcome back to the Hemingway List. Sometimes I don't realize how long I haven't talked for until I talk. Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I'm talking weird, off to a weird start, as usual, stalling while I open up my tabs. We're talking about book 10, chapter 7, I believe. Wait, didn't we read... Oh, yeah, we read... No, wait. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Oh, what a start. Okay. Again, no idea what this chapter was about. That was the question that I asked you guys about book 10, chapter 7. Just please explain it to me. I didn't follow. I Am Norwegian said, Ilyusha is really sick, and the doctor from Moscow expects him to die soon. When the father begged for something that he could do, the doctor recommended that he bring Ilyusha to Italy for the climate. He also recommended that the wife should be admitted to a French institution. Kolya calls the doctor a quack and finally threatens to sick the dog after him. Kolya leaves so his mother won't be worried. He takes the dog with him, promising to return soon. To me, that sounds like the story is saying, wouldn't it be tragic if he died before Kolya could return? Yeah, that's what I thought too when Kolya had to go and I'll be right back and this kid's dying. And yeah, I had the exact same thought. I Am Norwegian. Techrific said, I agree with Kolya. All the doctors we've encountered so far have been quacks. This one is no exception. His whole approach is so outrageous. He's giving recommendations to a destitute family to send Ilyusha to Sicily and the wife and daughter to a Caucasus, I'm guessing the beaches on the Crimean Peninsula. These are recommendations I guess he usually makes to his rich patrons in Moscow. He seems totally oblivious to the family's plight. Tekrific also said, why is Zucha back to being called Perezvon? Is it not the same dog? I'm confused again. Soma Stars was wondering that too. And Uncle Josime said, kids are weird, shrug emoji. Fun fact, Zucha means bug in English, and Perezvon means chime. Laura Weistich said, according to the footnote in my book, Perezvon means chime of bells. So, that's why Kolya says he hears the bell, but where it is he cannot tell. There we go. A little bit of information, a little tidbit of information. Thank you very much for that, Laura Weistich. I love those little extra... what could you even call that? Like details, I suppose. Little details that there's no way I would have picked up on any of that just reading it by myself. And it's this community where we pick out little things like that. That's what I really love about this is finding out those little moments where which otherwise would have gone completely over my head. And I always wonder, like, all right, those things would have gone over my head if I didn't have you guys. But how many, even collectively, how many things are going over our head? Because books are so packed full of things with extra meaning from what you perceive at first. And I bet we just read past so many tons of things when we read books. Not necessarily just us in this community, but just in general. Don't you think? We must just read past so many things that just go straight in one ear and out the other. Well, whatever you want to say. Anyway, that is the conversation. That's the conversation. Pretty short and sweet. I think this is quite a long chapter from memory. It's 2, 4, 6, 8 pages. Oh, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. It's a little bit on the long side, but you know, it's not one of those monster 14 or 15 page chapters. Okay, this is book 11, which is entitled Ivan. We're going to be checking in with Ivan. Chapter 1 is called At Grushenka's. Alyosha went towards the cathedral square to the widow Morozov's house to see Grushenka, who had sent Fenya to him early in the morning with an urgent message begging him to come. Questioning Fenya, Alyosha learned that her mistress had been particularly distressed since the previous day, during the 2 months that had passed since Mitch's arrest. Alyosha had called frequently at the widow Morozov's house, both from his own inclination and to take messages for Mitya. 3 days after Mitch's arrest, Grushenka was taken very ill and was ill for nearly 5 weeks. For one whole week, she was unconscious. She was very much changed, thinner, and a little sallow, though she had for the past fortnight been well enough to go out. But to Alyosha, her face was even more attractive than before, and he liked to meet her eyes when he went in to her. A look of firmness and intelligent purpose had developed in her face. There were signs of a spiritual transformation in her, and a steadfast, fine, and humble determination that nothing could shake could be discerned in her. There was a small vertical line between her brows, which gave her charming face a look of concentrated thought, almost austere at the first glance. There was scarcely a trace of her former frivolity. It seemed strange to Alyosha, too, that in spite of the calamity that had overtaken the poor girl, betrothed to a man who had been arrested for a terrible crime, almost at the instant of her betrothal, in spite of her illness and the almost inevitable sentence hanging over Mitya, Grushenka had not yet lost her youthful cheerfulness. There was a soft light in the once proud eyes, though at times they gleamed with the old vindictive fire, where she was visited by one disturbing thought stronger than ever in her heart. The object of that uneasiness was the same as ever, Katerina Ivanovna, of whom Grushenka had even raved when she lay in delirium. Alyosha knew that she was fearfully jealous of her, yet Katerina Ivanovna had not yet once visited Mitya in his prison, though she might have done it whether she liked, whenever she liked. All this made a difficult problem for Alyosha, for he was the only person to whom Grushenka opened her heart and from whom she was continually asking advice. Sometimes he was unable to say anything. Full of anxiety, he entered her lodging. She wasn't home. She had returned from seeing Mitya half an hour before, and from the rapid movement with which she had leapt up from her chair to meet him, he saw that she had been expecting him with great impatience. A pack of cards dealt for a game of fools lay on the table. A bed had been made up on the leather sofa on the other side, and Maximov lay half reclining on it. He wore a dressing gown and a cotton nightcap, and was evidently ill and weak, though he was smiling blissfully. When the homeless old man returned with Grushenka from Mokroe 2 months before, he had simply stayed on and was still staying with her. He arrived with her in rain and sleet, sat down on the sofa, drenched and scared, and gazed mutely at her with a timid, appealing smile. Grushenka, who was in terrible grief and in the first stage of fever, almost forgot his existence in all she had to do the first half hour after her arrival. Suddenly she chanced to look at him intently. He laughed a pitiful, helpless little laugh. She called Fenya and told her to give him something to eat. All that day he sat in the same place, almost without stirring. When it got dark and the shutters were closed, Fenya asked her mistress, "Is the gentleman going to stay the night, mistress?" "Yes, make him a bed on the sofa," answered Grushenka. Questioning him more in detail, Grushenka learned from him that he had literally nowhere to go, and that Mr. Kalganov, my benefactor, told me straight that he wouldn't receive me again, and gave me 5 rubles. "Well, God bless you. You'd better stay then," Grushenka decided in her grief, smiling compassionately at him. Her smile wrung the old man's heart, and his lips twitched with grateful tears. And so the destitute wanderer had stayed with her ever since. He did not leave the house, even when she was ill. Fenya and her grandmother, the cook, did not turn him out, but went on serving him meals and making up his bed on the sofa. Grushenka had grown used to him, and coming back from seeing Mitya, whom she had begun to visit in prison before she was really well, she would sit down and begin talking to Maximushka about trifling matters to keep her from thinking of her sorrow. The old man turned out to be a good storyteller on occasions, so that at last he became necessary to her. Grushenka saw scarcely anyone else beside Alyosha, who did not come every day and never stayed long. Her old merchant lay seriously ill at the time, at his last gasp, as they said in the town, and he did, in fact, die a week after Mitch's trial. 3 weeks before his death, feeling the end approaching, he made his sons, their wives, and children come upstairs to him at last and bade them not to leave him again. From that moment he gave strict orders to his servants not to admit Grushenka and to tell her, "If she came, the master wishes you long life and happiness and tells you to forget him." But Grushenka sent almost every day to inquire after him. Wait, who died? Fenya. "You've come at last," she cried, flinging down the cards and joyfully greeting Alyosha, "and Maximushka's been scaring me that perhaps you wouldn't come. Ah, how I need you. Sit down to the table. What will you have, coffee?" Yes, please, said Alyosha, sitting down at the table. I am very hungry. That's right. Fenya, Fenya, coffee, cried Grushenka. Okay, Fenya didn't die. It's been made a long time, ready for you. And bring some little pies, and mind that they're hot. Mind that they're hot. Do you know, we've had a storm over these pies today. I took them to the prison for him. And would you believe it, he threw them back at me. He would not eat them. Sorry, he would not eat them. I got distracted then, obviously. He would not eat them. He flung one of them on the floor and stamped on it. So I said to him, shall I leave them with the water? If you don't eat them before evening, it will be that your venomous spite is enough for you. With that I went away. We quarrelled again, would you believe it? Whenever I go, we quarrel. Grushenka said all this in one breath in her agitation. Maximov, feeling nervous, at once smiled and looked on the floor. What did you quarrel about this time? Asked Alyosha. I didn't expect it in the least. Only fancy, he is jealous of the pole. Jealous of the pole. Why are you keeping him? He said. So you've begun keeping him. He is jealous. Jealous of me all the time. Jealous eating and sleeping. He even took into his head to be jealous of Kuzma last week. But he knew about the pole before. Yes, but there it is. He has known about him from the very beginning. But today he suddenly got up and began scolding about him. I am ashamed to repeat what he said. Silly fellow. Rakitin went in as I came out. Perhaps Rakitin is egging him on. What do you think? She added carelessly. He loves you. That's what it is. He loves you so much. He loves you so much. And now he is particularly worried. I should think he might be with the trial tomorrow. And I went to him to say something about tomorrow, for I dread to think what's going to happen. Then you say that he is worried, but how worried I am. And he talks about the pole. He's too silly. He's not jealous of Maximushka yet, anyway. My wife was dreadfully jealous over me, too, Maximov put in his word. Jealous of you, Grushenka laughed in spite of herself. Of whom could she have been jealous? Of the servant girls. Hold your tongue, Maximushka. I am in no laughing mood now. I feel angry. Don't ogle the pies. I shan't give you any. They are not good for you. I won't give you any vodka either. I have to look after him, too, just as though I kept an almshouse, she laughed. I don't deserve your kindness. I am a worthless creature, said Maximov with tears in his voice. You would do better to spend your kindness on people of more use than me. Ech, everyone is of use, Maximushka. And how can we tell who's of most use? If only that pole didn't exist. If only that pole didn't exist, Alyosha. He's taken it into his head to fall ill, too, today. I've been to see him also, and I shall send him some pies, too, on purpose. I hadn't seen him any. I hadn't sent him any, but Mitya accused me of it, so now I shall send some. Ah, there's Fenya with a letter. Yes, it's from the Poles, begging again. Pan Musyolovich had indeed sent an extremely long and characteristically eloquent letter in which he begged her to send him the 3 rubles. In the letter he enclosed a receipt for the sum with a promise to repay it within 3 months, signed Pan Rublevsky as well. Grushenka had received many such letters, accompanied by such receipts from her former lover during the fortnight of her convalescence, but she knew that the 2 Poles had been to ask after her health during her illness. The first letter Grushenka got from them was a long one, written on large notepaper and with a big family crest on the seal. It was so obscure and rhetorical that Grushenka put it down before she had read half, unable to make head or tail of it. She could not attend to letters then. First letter was followed next day and by another in which Pan Musyolovich begged her for a loan of 2,000 rubles for a very short period. Grushenka left that letter. 2 unanswered. A whole series of letters had followed, one every day, all as pompous and rhetorical, but the loan asked for gradually diminishing, dropped to 800 rubles, then to 25, to 10, and finally Grushenka received a letter in which both the Poles begged her for only 1 ruble, and included a receipt signed by both. Then Grushenka suddenly felt sorry for them, and at dusk she went round herself to their lodging. She found the 2 Poles in great poverty, almost destitution, without food or fuel, without cigarettes, in debt to their landlady. The 200 rubles they had carried off from Mitya and Mokroi had soon disappeared, but Grushenka was surprised at their meeting, her with arrogant dignity and self-assertion, with the greatest punctilio and pompous speeches. Grushenka simply laughed and gave her former admirer 10 rubles. Then, laughing, she told Mitcher of it, and he was not in the least jealous. But ever since, the Poles had attached themselves to Grishenka and bombarded her daily with requests for money, and she had always sent them small sums. And now that day, Mitcher had taken it into his head to be fearfully jealous. Like a fool, I went round to him just for a minute on the way to see Mitcher, for he is ill too, my Pole, Grishenka began again with nervous haste. I was laughing, telling Mitcher about it. Fancy, I said, my Pole had the happy thought to sing his old songs to me, to the guitar. He thought I would be touched and marry him. Mitcher leapt up, swearing. So, there, I'll send them the pies. Fenya, is it that little girl they've sent? Here, give her 3 rubles and pack up 12 pies in a paper, and tell her to take them, and you, Alyosha, should be sure to tell Mitcher that I did send them the pies. I wouldn't tell him anything, said Alyosha, smiling. Ech, you think he is unhappy about it? Why, he's jealous on purpose. He doesn't care, said Grishenka bitterly. On purpose? Queried Alyosha. I tell you, you are silly, Alyosha. I know nothing about it. With all your cleverness, I am not offended that he is jealous of a girl like me. I would be offended if he were not jealous. I am like that. I am not offended at jealousy. I have a fierce heart, too. I can be jealous myself. Only what offends me is that he doesn't love me at all. I tell you, he is jealous now on purpose. Am I blind? Don't I see? He began talking to me just now of that woman, of Katerina, saying she was this and that, how she had ordered a doctor from Moscow for him to try and save him, how she had ordered the best counsel, the most learned one, too, so he loves her. If he'll praise her to my face, more shame to him, he's treated me badly himself. So he attacked me to make out I am in fault first and to throw it all on me. You were with your Pole before me, so I can't be blamed for Katerina. That's what it amounts to. He wants to throw the whole blame on me. He attacked me on purpose, I tell you, but I will... Grishenka could not finish saying what she would do. She hid her eyes in a handkerchief and sobbed violently. He doesn't love Katerina Ivanovna, said Alyosha firmly. Well, whether he loves her or not, I'll soon find out for myself, said Grishenka with a menacing note in her voice, taking the handkerchief from her eyes. Her face was distorted. Alyosha saw sorrowfully that from being mild and serene it had become sullen and spiteful. Enough of this foolishness, she said suddenly. It's not for that I sent you for you. Alyosha, darling, tomorrow, what will happen tomorrow? That's what worries me, and it's only me it worries. I look at everyone and no one is thinking of it. No one cares about it. Are you thinking about it even? Tomorrow he'll be tried, you know. Tell me, how will he be tried? You know it's the valet. The valet killed him. Good heavens, can they condemn him in a place of the valet, and will no one stand up for him? They haven't troubled the valet at all, have they? He's been severely cross-examined, observed Alyosha thoughtfully, but everyone came to the conclusion it was not he. Now he is lying very ill. He has been ill ever since that attack. Really ill, added Alyosha. Oh dear, couldn't you go to that council yourself and tell him the whole thing by yourself? He's been brought from Petersburg for 3,000 rubles, they say. We gave these 3,000 together, Ivan, Katerina Ivanovna and I, but she paid 2,000 for the doctor from Moscow herself. The council, Fetyukovich, would have charged more, but the case has become known all over Russia. It's talked of in all the papers and journals. Fetyukovich agreed to come more for the glory of the thing, because the case has become so notorious. I saw him yesterday. Well, did you talk to him? Grishenka put in eagerly. He listened and said nothing. He told me that he had already formed his opinion, but he promised to give my words consideration. Consideration? Ah, they are swindlers. They'll ruin him. And why did she send for the doctor? As an expert, they want to prove that Mitch is mad and committed the murder when he didn't know what he was doing. Alyosha smiled gently, but Mitcher won't agree to that. Yes, but that would be the truth if he had killed him, cried Grishenka. He was mad then, perfectly mad, and that was my fault, wretched I am. But of course he didn't do it, and they are all against him. The whole town, even Fenya's evidence went to prove he had done it. And the people at the shop, and that official, and at the tavern too, before people had heard him say so, they are all against him, all crying out against him. Yes, there's a fearful accumulation of evidence, Alyosha observed grimly. And Grigory Vasilievich sticks to his story that the door was open, persists that he saw it. There's no shaking him. I went and talked to him myself. He's rude about it, too. Yes, that's perhaps the strongest evidence against him, said Alyosha. And As for Mitch's being mad, he certainly seems like it now, Grishenka began, with a peculiar, anxious and mysterious air. Do you know, Alyosha, I've been wanting to talk to you about it for a long time. I go to him every day and simply wonder at him. Tell me now, what do you suppose he's always talking about? He talks and talks, and I can make nothing of it. I fancied he was talking of something intellectual that I couldn't understand in my foolishness. Only he suddenly began talking to me about a babe, that is, about some child. Why is this babe poor, he said. It's for that babe I am going to Siberia now. I am not a murderer, but I must go to Siberia. What that meant, what babe, I couldn't tell for the life of me. Only I cried when he said it, because he said it so nicely. He cried himself, and I cried too. He suddenly kissed me and made the sign of the cross over me. What did it mean, Alyosha? Tell me, what is this babe? It must be Rakitin, who's been going to see him lately, smiled Alyosha. Though that's not Rakitin's doing. I didn't see Mitya yesterday. I'll see him today. No, it's not Rakitin. It's his brother Ivan Fyodorovich upsetting him. It's his going to see him. That's what it is, Grishenka began, and suddenly broke off. Alyosha gazed at her in amazement. Ivan's going. Has he been to see him? Mitya told me. Mitya, I lost my spot again. Mitya told me himself that Ivan hasn't been once. There, there, what a girl I am, blurting things out, exclaimed Grishenka, confused and suddenly blushing. Stay, Alyosha, hush. Since I've said so much, I'll tell the whole truth. He's been to see him twice, the first directly he arrived. He galloped here from Moscow, at once, of course, before I was taken ill, and the second time was a week ago. He told Mitya not to tell you about it under any circumstances, and not to tell anyone. In fact, he came secretly. Alyosha sat, plunged in thought, considering something. The news evidently impressed him. Ivan doesn't talk to me of Mitch's case, he said slowly. He's said very little to me these last 2 months, and whenever I go to see him, he seems vexed at my coming, so I've not been to him for the last 3 weeks. If he was there a week ago, there certainly has been a change in Mitch's this week. There has been a change, Grishenka assented quickly. They have a secret, they have a secret. Mitya told me himself there was a secret, and such a secret that Mitya can't rest. Before then, he was cheerful, and indeed he is cheerful now, but when he shakes his head like that, you know, and strides about the room and keeps pulling at the hair on his head, on his right temple, at his right hand, I know there is something on his mind worrying him. I know he was cheerful before, though indeed he was cheerful today. But you said he was worried. Yes, he is worried, and yet cheerful. He keeps on being irritable for a minute, and then cheerful, and then irritable again. And you know, Alyosha, I am constantly wondering at him why this awful thing is hanging over him. He sometimes laughs at such trifles as though he were a baby himself. And did he really tell you not to tell me about Ivan? Did he say, don't tell him? Yes, he told me, don't tell him. It's you that Mitch is most afraid of, because it's a secret. He said himself it was a secret. Alyosha, darling, go to him and find out what the secret is, and come to tell me, Grishenka besought him with sudden eagerness. Set my mind at rest, and I may know the worst that it's in store for me. That's why I sent for you. You think it's something to do with you? If it were, he wouldn't have told you there was a secret. I don't know, perhaps he wants to tell me, but doesn't dare to. He warns me, there is a secret, he tells me, but he won't tell me what it is. What do you think yourself? What do I think? It's the end for me, that's what I think. They all three have been plotting my end, for Katerina's in it. It's all Katerina, it all comes from her. She is this and that means that I am not. He tells me that beforehand, warns me. He's planning to throw me over, that's the whole secret. They've planned it together, the three of them, Mitya, Katerina, and Ivan Fyodorovich. Alyosha, I've been wanting to ask you for a long time. A week ago, he suddenly told me that Ivan was in love with Katerina. Because he often goes to see her. Did he tell me the truth or not? Tell me, on your conscience, tell me the worst. I won't tell you a lie. Ivan is not in love with Katerina Ivanovna, I think. Oh, that's what I thought. He is lying to me, shameless deceiver, that's what it is. And he was jealous of me just now, so as to put the blame on me afterwards. He is stupid. He can't disguise what he is doing. He is so open, you know. But I'll give it to him. I'll give it to him. You believe it. I did it, he said. He said that to me. He reproached me with that. God forgive him. You wait. I'll make it hot for Katerina at the trial. I'll just say a word then. I'll tell everything then. And again she cried bitterly. This I can tell you for certain, Grishenka, Alyosha said, getting up. First that he loves you more than anyone in the world. And you only, believe me, I know, I do know. The second thing is that I don't want to worm his secret out of him, but if he'll tell me of himself today, I shall tell him straight out that I have promised to tell you. Then I'll come to you today and tell you. Only I fancy Katerina Ivanovna has nothing to do with it, and that the secret is about something else. That's certain. It isn't likely it's about Katerina Ivanovna, it seems to me. Goodbye for now. Alyosha shook hands with her. Grushenka was still crying. He saw that she put a little faith in his consolation, but she was better for having had her sorrow out, for having spoken of it. He was sorry to leave her in such a state of mind. But he was in haste. He had a great many things to do still. Alright, there we go. Another chapter down. Yeah. Not really sure what was going on there, so I'm going to ask you guys to help me out. Over on reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist, we'll discuss the chapter and figure out just what the heck it meant. Other than that, thanks for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.